Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with an update on Secretary of State Kerry's visit to Egypt, where he's trying to reach out to both the opposition and government to end the political impasse and economic freefall. A specialist on Egypt at the Brookings Institution, Khaled El-Gindi, joins us to discuss the new Secretary of State's delicate mission to revive a revolution at the crossroads facing an opposition largely convinced that America has colluded with the Islamists to create a new dictatorship. Then we'll look into how the food giants have hooked America on the poison they peddle in the name of nutrition. Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Michael Moss joins us to discuss his explosive new book, Salt, Sugar, Fat, How the Food Giants Hooked Us. We'll discuss how the corporate food cartel manipulates nutrition to fatten their bottom line and the extent to which the food monopolies know they are responsible for America's obesity epidemic, but rather than eliminate sugar, salt, and fat from processed food, they are encouraging the addictions of their heavy users that feed their profits. Then finally, we'll go to the Syrian-Turkish border to speak with Rafif Jujati, who is the English-language spokesperson for the Syrian Local Coordination Committees, the umbrella group of the Syrian opposition. With the noose apparently tightening on the embattled regime, we will discuss the latest claims made by the dictator Assad in an interview with the London Sunday Times that the British Foreign Secretary has called delusional. Joining us now is Khaled El-Gindi, who is a visiting fellow with the Saban Center of Middle East Policy at the Brookings Institution. He previously served as an advisor to the Palestinian leadership on permanent status negotiations with Israel from 2004 to 2009 and was a key participant in the Annapolis negotiations launched in November of 2007. He was recently in Egypt, where he's been observing the Egyptian presidential elections. And Secretary of State Kerry is in Cairo, Khaled El-Gindi. Am I correct in suggesting he's got a delicate dance to do there between navigating between the opposition and the government in this highly polarized country that appears to have a political impasse, not to mention a economic freefall?
It's true. It's a very delicate dance that he has to perform in Egypt, as well as back in Washington, where there's a lot of pressure. You know, in a similar way, there is he's getting pressure. The administration is getting pressure from really both sides. In Washington, there are critics of the administration's approach. They feel that he's too close to the Muslim Brotherhood. And there are calls for cutting aid, of using a very heavy hand with the Egyptians. And at the same time, he's getting heat from the Egyptian opposition as well. So it's a delicate dance in Cairo and in Washington.
And he's offered up, what, $450 million in aid, and there's also a $4.8 billion IMF loan that's out there. So what are the conditions on this loan that the U.S. and the IMF are trying to place on the Morsi government?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of reforms that have to go, that have to be in place in order to secure, especially the IMF loans. There are a lot of austerity measures that are going to have to be implemented for Egypt to have access to these loans. Now, the loans are very important because, obviously, you know, like you said, the Egyptian economy is in a free fall. There's, you know, foreign investment is drying up. Inflation is soaring. The pound is decreasing. The value of the pound, the Egyptian pound, is decreasing. But it's important to keep in mind, though, that Egypt's economic problems are much bigger than even the $5 billion in IMF loans. That amount, as substantial as it is, will be able to maybe stabilize Egypt for 2 months maximum, which of course is important, but Egypt's economic problems are long-term. And I think the administration is very concerned that if Egypt is the pillar of American policy in the region, that it's supposed to be a pillar of stability, if Egypt is itself economically not viable, then that has very serious ramifications for the United States, which depends on a stable Egypt for it to really be the pivot in the region for the United States. So it's a much bigger economic problem. You know, we're talking here that I think one of the problems that the administration maybe hasn't fully appreciated is that in order to stabilize the economy, you have to get the politics right. And Egypt's problem right now, it is economic, but you can't solve economics unless you've dealt with the political instability. And there's a lot of opposition demands that haven't been met. There are large constituencies of Egyptians that feel that they've been excluded, that the Brotherhood, the ruling, that President Morsi and his Brotherhood party have acted unilaterally and in a very heavy-handed way without much regard, even though they won by a very narrow margin. President Morsi won by 51.7%. It's a very narrow margin. And they are taking these very dramatic steps in a way that is alienating a large chunks of that remaining 49%. So it is, it's a difficult situation for both the opposition and for the ruling party in Egypt. Neither one seem inclined to want to find a common ground.
Again, I'm speaking with Khaled El-Gindi, a visiting fellow with the Saban Center for Middle East Policy at the Brookings Institution. Now, I'm not sure the extent to which this Egyptian Brotherhood government, how fundamentalist they are, in the sense that I'm not sure that the Quran tells you how to pick up the garbage and run a government. But obviously they have been the only opposition throughout the entire dictatorship of military dictatorship that has ruled Egypt for decades. So they're not surprising they have a majority, even though the runoff was such that maybe the most popular candidates didn't, in fact, get elected. And this is not a democracy that represents the will of the people so much of those who've won because of the way that the runoff was conducted. And, of course, the opposition have vowed to boycott the next elections, which is what Kerry was trying to talk them into not doing, although he recognized apparently that the U.S. doesn't have a lot of credibility. My understanding is the real problem that the U.S. has there is that so many members of the opposition honestly believe that the United States has colluded with the Islamists to create this new dictatorship.
Right, right. And I think that really speaks to the deep reservoir of mistrust that exists in Egypt and across the Arab world toward the United States. I mean, there is, you know, it sounds silly now. If someone had said, it even sounds silly today, but imagine 2 years ago if someone had said, you know, in 2 years from now, the United States will collude with the Muslim Brotherhood in order to thwart Egyptian democracy. The whole notion seems like a fantasy, since the Brotherhood was a group that the United States wasn't even dealing with, wasn't even prepared to acknowledge, to talk to. So it is, of course, it's not an accurate description of the reality. The reality is that the United States is dealing with whoever is in power, and the United States is primarily concerned with its own interests. And seeing its own interests, seeing that its interests, U.S. interests, are the Brotherhood has committed to upholding the treaty with Israel. Egypt continues to be a major partner in U.S. counterterrorism efforts. The Suez Canal is a major strategic waterway that is connected directly to the supply of oil to world markets. These are strategic interests for the United States. The United States does not have a strategic interest in Egypt becoming a liberal democracy.
Hello, did we just lose you? I think Yeah, I think we lost that phone call. Again, I've been speaking with Khaled El-Gindi, who's a visiting fellow with the Saban Center for Middle East Policy at the Brookings Institution. He previously served as an advisor to the Palestinian leadership on permanent status negotiations with Israel from 2004 to 2009 and was a key participant in the Annapolis negotiation launched in November 2007. And we'll be talking about Secretary of State Kerry's trip to Cairo, Egypt, where he is at the moment, having met with both the opposition and the government of Morsi, trying to do what he can, obviously, to allay the distrust that so many Egyptians feel towards the United States. So, Khaled, give us a sense then of what he can do, Kerry, to get the opposition back. I mean, obviously, by boycotting the elections, they don't advance themselves politically. On the other hand, they really believe that the rules are rigged.
Yeah, I mean, they feel that the deck is stacked against them. Elections are the Brotherhood's strength. They excel in retail politics, not something that the opposition has been terribly good at, and they haven't gotten much better since the beginning of the transition. But they also feel that the election law, the constitution, all of these new things that the Brotherhood has essentially almost unilaterally or single-handedly used to stack the deck, all of these are working against them. So they have less and less incentive to participate in elections. They are determined to, if they can't defeat the Brotherhood in the polling booth, then the least they can do is try to deny them the legitimacy of what an electoral victory would mean. It is classic spoiler politics. It's not a sophisticated political strategy for an opposition. But it is the best that they've been able to muster up, given their disorganization and their political weakness, and the fact that they're speaking in many different voices. This is not a unified opposition with a single vision for Egypt. These are leftists and centrists and liberals and secular folks who are not necessarily liberal, but who are simply opposed to the Islamists of any kind. So it's a hodgepodge in terms of the opposition, and they haven't been reading from the same sheet of music. So it's not surprising. I think what Kerry would have liked to see a more forthcoming opposition. Opposition would have liked to see a more forthcoming administration, an American administration that was prepared to put pressure on the president, the Egyptian president, to open up the discussion on the election law, to fix certain problems with dealing with the police, for example, police reforms. These are the kinds of things the opposition was hoping that the U.S. administration and Kerry would come and try to apply some pressure. That hasn't really happened, and I don't think it's likely to happen that we're going to see that much pressure in terms of significant democratic reforms. I think the primary concern for the United States is stability. The problem that they haven't is the thing that they haven't really realized is that stability, economic stability, or any kind of stability, depends very much on getting the politics right. And getting the politics right means the ruling party in Egypt is going to have to come down from its perch. It's going to have to make some compromises. And at the same time, the opposition is going to have to make some compromises of its own and be willing to participate instead of always playing the spoiler. Now, the United States doesn't seem to be prepared to push those two sides together. And I think that is probably too much to expect at this point.
Well, just in closing, Khaled El-Gindi, though, isn't there a broader kind of, obviously there's a broader proxy war going on throughout the Middle East between Iran and the Saudi and the Gulf. It's manifested, of course, in Syria at the moment. But what's underlying that is, of course, a religious competition, if you will, between two opposing theocracies, the Saudi theocracy and the Iranian theocracy. And there was a lot of alarm when recently Ahmadinejad went to Egypt. I'm not sure. So, you know, of course, somebody threw shoes at him because Egypt is a Sunni country. But it seems that in many ways, we're going to have to get used to political Islam. It's here to stay, obviously, going from the Arab Spring with Tunisia and Egypt. And I suspect some form of Islamic government will end up in Syria as well. don't we have a problem, though, in the sense that the Saudi regimes that are supposedly our friends are the ones that have been funding the Salafists both in Egypt and in Syria?
It's true, but I think it's important that we not oversimplify the picture as one as being either Sunni-Shiite rivalry or as secular Islamist. It's true that political Islam has been normalized. The West is prepared to deal with Islamists, and there are an array of Islamists. The Salafis and the Brotherhood don't really get along that much. They don't have the same vision of an Islamist or an Islamic state. They don't share that vision. The Saudis, you're right, have supported Salafis in Egypt as well as other countries. The Saudis have been much more ambivalent towards the Muslim Brotherhood, as have other Gulf states like the United Arab Emirates, which has actually been quite hostile towards the Muslim Brotherhood. So I think that the picture is much more nuanced, but I think your ultimate point is correct, that political Islam is here to stay in one form or another. I think a lot of people in Egypt are open to that fact, even, you know, among the opposition, people who don't oppose the Brotherhood because they're Islamists. They oppose them because they're unilateralists and because they have authoritarian tendencies. And they haven't really done much by way of Islamizing. Most of the grievances with the Brotherhood have to do with the fact that they're exclusionary, that they are not a consensus-driven movement, that they're much more unilateralist. So the picture is, I think, very mixed.
Well, thank you so much for joining us here, Khaled El-Gindi.
Oh, you're welcome.
Again, I've been speaking with Khaled El-Gindi, who's a visiting fellow with the Saban Center for Middle East Policy at the Brookings Institution. He previously served as an advisor to the Palestinian leadership on permanent status negotiations with Israel from 2004 to 2009 and was a key participant in the Annapolis negotiations launched in November of 2007. And he was recently in Egypt observing the Egyptian presidential elections. And, of course, Secretary of State Kerry is in Cairo trying to mediate between the opposition and the government at a political impasse while the economy is in free fall. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about how America's food giants have hooked us on the poison they peddle in the name of nutrition.